relationships to disclose. It's nice to see a lot of familiar faces and some new ones. Myron asked me to talk about new and common anti-fluoridation arguments. Obviously, I can't cover all of that in 15 minutes, but we'll try. So you have the abstract that was available to you. I'm not going to go over the details of that. But ever since fluoridation started in 1945, 70 years ago, as Dr. Lukian said, there's been an anti-fluoridation movement. And now with the availability of information and what I would call disinformation on the internet, it's ever more apparent that we are challenged to pursue the increase in the proportion of the United States population with access to fluoridated water. Those of you who shop at Costco, how many people shop at Costco or have shopped at Costco? So there's a thing called the Costco Connection that is published every month. And they have a question there. And the question that was posed was, should community drinking water be fluoridated? This was June of this year. And the American Dental Association was asked if they could provide a person to provide information about that. So you see my photograph above and Paul Connett's photograph below, and the words that we have, and then three people saying yes and three people saying no. And then you were supposed to click on the button here for your vote. And the next issue in July found that 65% approved of community drinking water, 35% said no. This may be a true reflection of the underlying sentiment for fluoridation, or maybe more of a reflection of the ability of the American Dental Association to put out the word to its members and constituent society members, but also Paul Connett's group had that opportunity as well. So some studies have not shown reduced tooth decay in fluoridated communities, and that's one of the arguments that the fluoridation, anti-fluoridationists make. And I'm not lumping all people who are opposed to fluoridation into this category called anti-fluoridationists, but for the purposes of this presentation, I'm calling them anti-fluoridationists. The majority of studies, however, have shown a benefit, and the 1986-87 NIDR at that time survey that Dr. Gooch just mentioned is the last national study we have on children that included fluoridation status. In 1990, there were two publications, one by John Yamayanis, who was the leading anti-fluoridationist at the time, somebody who had claimed that there were more than 10,000 deaths from fluoridation due to cancer every year, and by Brunel and Carlos from the NIDR. Almost 40,000 children were involved in the study. 17,000 were lifelong residents. And the difference in the two publications was based on whether or not you were looking at teeth, the DMFT, or whether you were looking at surfaces, the DMFS. If a tooth has two surfaces that are decayed and need treatment, then the DMFS indicator is more sensitive to, because you would record two for that tooth. However, on the DMFT index, you would only record one. So when we look at Brunel and Carlos, they analyzed the data and found that DMFS for permanent teeth was 18% less in fluoridated areas, a difference of only 0.6 of a surface for all children aged 5 to 17. When not taking into account supplemental fluoride, there was actually 25% less. Again, with Yamayanis looking at the teeth, and it's questionable why John Yamayanis died in 2000, why he chose to look at DMFT rather than DMFS, we don't really know. But he found that it was 4% less in the fluoridated areas, and that it was not a statistically significant difference. And that's what the anti-fluoridationists are hanging on to in terms of saying this large study showed that there was no benefit of fluoridation. However, in both reviews, both analyses, looking at primary teeth, whether it was surface data or primary data, there was 26% less in fluoridated areas for 5 to 9-year-olds, according to Brunel and Carlos, and Yamayanis looked at 5 to 7-year-olds in individual age groups and found 42% less DFS in 5-year-olds and gradient down to 11% in 7-year-olds. So the anti-fluoridationists don't talk about that difference when it comes to primary teeth, however. When analyzing the same data and looking at the individual age groups rather than combining all ages together, you can see that the mean of 0.6 is actually for 12-year-olds. And we know that the second permanent molars only come in at age 12. But there's a gradual increase to age 17 with a preventive benefit. And 5 to 6 year olds don't have very many permanent teeth, whereas 17-year-olds have had time exposure for all teeth to become decayed, if possible. We don't want all teeth to become decayed, but it's possible. So by the age of 17, 1.5 tooth surfaces are saved by virtue of living in a fluoridated community. And we could extrapolate from that, but I always get my hands slapped by statisticians when I talk about extrapolation. Ernie Newbern looked at the same data and looked at the regions of the United States and plotted this graph showing that the Pacific Coast region had a 60% benefit in terms of permanent teeth being decayed, where there was only 20% of the region that was fluoridated, whereas in the Midwest, where there was 75% of the region that was fluoridated, there was no measurable difference. And so this lack of difference in the heavily fluoridated area or region is due to what we call the diffusion effect, where other fluoride sources are available across those fluoridated and non-fluoridated boundaries. So one of the other arguments is that there's a lack of double-blind studies, examiner bias, and delayed eruption of teeth. Well, examiners can be blinded in a neutral site, and they could be single-blinded if the children are brought to a neutral site, and that's been done in a couple of studies, but not all. And there is lack of consensus on delayed eruption of teeth. And that was published most recently in 2014 by Jay Kumar's group, and their conclusion was that exposure to fluoride in drinking water did not delay the eruption of permanent teeth. This is the main reason why Hardy Lineback in Toronto claims that there's a benefit of fluoridation is because of delayed eruption of teeth. Fluoride affects teeth topically and not systemically, you may have heard. Well, in fact, yes, water fluoridation does produce a benefit after teeth are erupted, but also there's a systemic and a pre-eruptive benefit. There are four studies that I want to point you to. One is a rat study published in 1977, the Dutch study published in 1990, the Australian study published in 2003, and the review by Newbern in 2004. I want to focus on the Groeneveld study from Holland. What they looked at was dentinal caries, which is very important because enamel caries you don't need to restore. They looked at the different surfaces of the teeth, the pit and fissures, the proximal and smooth surfaces, and allotted a difference in terms of caries reduction, whether it was pre-eruption or post-eruption. Most of the benefit for pit and fissure occurs pre-eruptively, before the teeth come in the mouth, whereas with smooth surfaces, 75% of the benefit is in post-eruption. Most of the studies done on in vitro studies of enamel caries have been done with smooth surface caries, and so that's why we hear that the topical benefit is the predominant benefit. But if you look at the overall numbers of surfaces, I think it's clear that there's a systemic benefit as well as a pre-eruptive benefit. NIDCR says that fluoridation protects teeth in two ways, during the tooth-forming years and throughout life. That's the website for it. And this is my now 29-year-old who didn't have any teeth. This is a graphic display of an x-ray of the primary teeth with the permanent teeth developing, the first permanent molars erupted, just to give you an idea of what we're dealing with. What about the allegation that it deprives individuals of freedom of choice once water is fluoridated? Well, it's been the position of the courts of the United States that the government has a significant interest in the public health, and that overrides any objections of individuals. Whereas fluoride is a nutrient and not a medication, the courts have ruled, no one is forced to drink fluoridated water because there are alternative sources. And what a person believes is an absolute guaranteed by the Constitution, but one's practice to practice those beliefs may be restricted by in the public interest. There is no negative impact of water fluoridation on the environment that's been established. There were a couple of environmental impact reports in Washington State that confirmed that, and my publication of 2004 is listed on the CDC website. Last month in Sonoma County in California, there was a report on the effect of fluoridation, so should they proceed with it in Sonoma County, beyond Healdsburg, that voted to keep it very recently. And this study looked at all aspects of fish and concluded that 0.7 milligrams per liter poses no threat to salmonids in the local waterways. In fact, those fish could swim in fluoridated water and there would be a six-fold margin of safety. What about it causes harm to people? Arthritis, hypothyroidism, kidney disease, that CDC and ADA warn parents not to let infants drink water that's fluoridated, that it's causing osteosarcoma, killing people, that's a Harvard study. It's causing an epidemic of fluorosis, it reduces IQ and reduces the number of geniuses by 50%, that we're dealing with a toxic waste, and that the Nazis gave Jews fluoride in the concentration camps to make them docile, etc. Well, I'm not going to deal with all of those in the time that we have, but you've got to remember the basic principle of toxicology, which is that the dose distinguishes a remedy from the poison. So it's not the substance, but the dose that's important. And if you consume too much water, for instance, in a short period of time, it can be fatal. And that has happened. Yet we don't consider water to be toxic or poisonous. The same is true of fluoride, and there is an optimum amount that's beneficial. If you have too much of a good thing, it can be toxic. Many parts of the world have high natural occurring fluoride, including the United States. But in China, this was posted on Fluoride Action Network, which claimed that the prevalence of arthritis symptoms increased beyond 1.69 parts per million of fluoride in water. And their claim is by extrapolation that if it's harmful at that level, it surely must be harmful at lower levels. But if you look at the lower levels from that graph, the study shows low levels of joint pain or rigidity up to one part per million of fluoride. In fact, arthritis has been reviewed in several reviews of the literature, both in England by the World Health Organization and in Australia, concluding that there's no significant scientific support for the claim that fluoridation has an effect on arthritis. Hypothyroidism, there's a number of publications from India where there's high natural fluoride in the water, and they claim that fluoride is an antagonist to iodine. But those conditions are very, very different than what we find in the United States, and it has no bearing. In fact, the NIDC, National Research Council review that Dr. Gooch talked about, found that there were no endocrine effects, no thyroid effects, reaching the level considered to be signs of adverse effects at the 4 milligram per liter level. The epidemic of fluorosis has been touched upon, and it has increased moderate and severe dental fluorosis. But we should look at the kinds of studies that they were. The NHANES study is a school-based, is a household survey, and perhaps there were individual children at home that were examined that were not at school. And there's a lot of caveats with that. The recommended changes to use a pea-sized amount of toothpaste, for instance, didn't start till the early 90s. And the data on fluorosis aren't published after 2004, so that we don't know the effect of those early policies. Parents should not let their infants drink fluoridated water. Well, in fact, CDC says you can use fluoridated water for preparing infant formula. There are some caveats. If the infant is being exclusively fed by infant formula reconstituted with fluoridated water, perhaps occasionally using a non-fluoridated water source for that. Infants under 6 months of age, the adequate intake is breast milk, which has very little, but the tolerable upper intake for infants is 0.7 milligrams per liter. What about safety of additives in water? Well, they dissociate into fluoride ions and silicate ions, and there is no residual hydrofluorosilicic acid. And it's not industrial waste. It's a byproduct of making the stuff, and it's not fertilizer. It's guilt by association when they say that it is made from plants that are making fertilizer. With IQ, the well-done longitudinal cohort study in New Zealand that is published in the American Journal of Public Health this year found that with IQ studies being done on this population at ages 7 to 13 and at ages 38, their conclusion was that there was no significant differences in IQ because of fluoride exposure, and they don't support the assertion that fluoride is neurotoxic at all. Fluoride in cancer, no, it doesn't cause cancer, and there's been several reviews, including the one in California, where the epidemiologists unanimously voted to, after reviewing all the information, that fluoride does not cause cancer. The National Kidney Foundation says you don't have to drink fluoride-free water if you've got kidney disease and there isn't any problems if you do. And certainly fluoride intake is a secondary concern when we're looking at people with kidney disease. So if you want to evaluate web pages, you should go to some sites to know how to do that. And there are lots of anti-fluoridation websites, lots of pro-fluoridation websites, we're not trying to do that, sorry. And so if you want to go to resources, look at Fluoridation Facts. A new version will come out early next year. It'll be a digital version, whether or not HHS has announced its final recommendations. This is a page-turner in my book. Fluoride Wars, written by two hydrologists with nothing to gain by reviewing fluoridation, well-researched. It's a wonderful text. I highly recommend it. You can put it on your Kindle or whatever. Thank you very much.